Okay, this is December 4th, Sunday, 2011. It's 4 in the afternoon Hawaii time, and this is the opening plenary discussion of the month of December, the final month of the McLuhan Centenary, our version. We call it McLuhan on Maui, and we've had 10 or 11 months of discarnate conferences, telephone conferences, and other electronic phenomena. And now we stopped that as of December 1st, and now we're here in the physical. It's no longer discarnate, it's incarnate.
There's no other way to get in touch with us except to fly to Maui.
Yes. And that was, the person who just spoke was Miroslav Bits. And he is presenting the first paper here. Let's see, what else can we say about what's happening? It's actually cloudy today. Very unusual. It's cloudy. Miroslav's not getting the wow of a Hawaiian summer sunny day right now, but maybe he needs adjustment. Maybe he's bringing that Ukrainian dour, Slavic, depressed...
We can't function otherwise.
Yeah, yeah. McLuhan said the Russians could never take over the world. They're too grim. Or they never have the charisma to pull it off.
Yeah, yeah.
So, let's see. I think that's it. I think we will invite Miroslav to open his first paper. He may present others, depending on who shows up. And it's quite an active audience. Many of them are taking their showers from having been in the water, just at the little shower place. Just at 20 feet away.
You're laughing at me already.
Yeah. No, they're not. No, no. They're actually stoned on the whole idea that McLuhan was still talked about 100 years later.
Yeah. Well, I guess I wanted to ask you why you're so involved with McLuhan and how you are involved with McLuhan.
Okay, well, that's I've talked about that many times in my diaries. I'd rather not go into me. We'll do that. I'll explain that later. But let's go into what you wanted to talk about, and which was Mike, right?
Yes. Yeah. Well, Mike Rupert does a show on the Progressive Radio Network, and he's the director of Collapse, which is a movie that I haven't seen, but it's about, he goes into the themes in the show as well. But it was backed by Leonardo DiCaprio. And basically, he's been talking all about, for the past 2 months, Occupy Wall Street. And really, he's a former cop, LAPD.
Yeah.
And
that's back in the 70s, a long time ago.
Yeah.
He got out of that. That was where he got sabotaged as a cop in the late 70s, maybe by his first wife. And then he was on his own, like, from that point on, been claiming to do research. And being some kind of a journalistic investigator. And then he got his name after 9-1-1. He was the first person to get out there with a conspiracy theory on 9-1-1.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah,
that.
That's how he got well known. And I know that Dave Emery had interviewed him on Dave Emery's show out in the West Coast in the late 90s. I think Rupert would talk about police work or whatever stuff that he knew. I think he picked up on, Rupert picked up on how the CIA was very involved with the LA Police Department. That was a shocker to him in the late 70s, I think. So, back to that's who you're talking about. So you have him on the Progressive Radio Network.
Yeah, well, interestingly, I just thought of something about Occupy Wall Street, which relates to him. Basically, with the crackdown and everything, seems to have fizzled out a lot at this point.
Yeah, that's what I don't get. There's not much cover. Well, I'm not watching the media, so I don't know. But it does, I feel that there's not much attention since the crackdown a week or so ago.
Well, I live walking distance from Zuccotti Park, so, I mean, you know, I definitely see it's palpable. It's not palpable, actually, anymore. It's the thing.
Is it empty, the park?
No, they're still there trying to retake it, trying to put up tents. The cops will take them away.
Yes.
Yeah. Hold me.
I'm 19.
Are you a fan of McLuhan as well?
What is that?
What is that? It's a what? You walked into the wrong conference. Okay. So that was someone pretending to be concerned and listening to...
Oh, no, that was an intelligence agent,
yeah,
for sure.
Good point, good point. Yeah. And I didn't know you wanted
to... I don't see him smoking.
Yeah, well, I don't even see him anymore. He just evaporated from Parallel World. So, okay, so what were you saying?
Oh, well, what occurred to me was...
Occupy.
If we go away from Rupert for a second, what they're doing now, in an act of desperation, is basically doing... They've taken the hunger strikes.
Mm-hmm.
Just in the past 2 days, or 3 days. They've started
they're
to do
commit
a,
suicide?
They're gonna, they've started to do a hunger strike.
What?
And I was thinking about that in terms of the chemical, you know, body that they're trying to preserve so much, and this whole Zuccotti lung thing.
Yeah.
And how just, how amazing, it, you know, how fitting it is that a hunger strike is their next line of attack when basically they're being starved by the media.
Right.
And now they're doing their own hunger strike to, like, you know what, to double down, I guess.
They're going to starve themselves to see if that carries any weight in a discarnate world. Well,
yeah.
Does killing the chemical body mean anything for the digital people, the digital reality?
Which is a dangerous road to tread because, you know, I mean, in the digital world, people commit suicide over Twitter and nobody bats an eye. I mean,
and okay, that's a good point then, that they're biased. Because they're trying to preserve the chemical body, they think that maybe is their ultimate threat to threaten it, and they're going to find out, no, you never had a chemical body, and we don't care.
Yeah.
That could be their Achilles heel.
Rude awakening.
Okay, go back to Mike Rupert. What is it that he's saying about the Occupy Wall Street?
To be honest, it had started when I had just started over there, and he was talking about it from the beginning, but not as...
Okay, you work at Progressive Radio Network?
Correct.
That's your job?
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
So he started at a certain point in September, or I started in September. His show had been going on for a while, but he started talking about Occupy Wall Street right when I started there, so...
Yeah?
So it's been the whole time, but now it's really gotten just personal with him. So in the past two shows... I've been engineering his shows.
So you talked to him before the show?
After and during.
Yeah, you're the his producer?
The engineer, yeah.
Yeah.
Producer. And the thing is that he cried. He's broken down and cried the past two shows. Because of the crackdown, because he can't believe it. Because having been a police officer, he's just so overtaken by just sadness because of the police crackdowns and the macings and things like that, and the pepper spray. That he just couldn't take it. He literally on the radio has broken out.
I think that's emotionally immature. I mean, what the heck is this problem?
You'd think for a cop. I mean,
yeah.
He'd be,
but he hasn't been a cop
for
34 years. It's been a long time.
The heart grows fonder, doesn't it?
It actually felt a raindrop.
No.
Yeah, dude. But it's very nothing. There's nothing.
Very nothing.
Very nothing. It's virtual raindrop. Unless I'm hallucinating, or the tears of Mike Rupert are fucking being thrown into my face. This guy is crawling. This guy can vomit. No sympathy for Mr. Rupert. Okay, sorry to interrupt your paper. Let's go back. Okay, what would be your theme about Rupert? Okay, he's crying. But let's go back. What is he? Why does he put so much importance on Occupy Wall Street?
You know, I don't really know, because he's all about collapse. He's all about it's going to shit anyway.
Doesn't he know it already has collapsed? Or he probably would agree to that, right?
Yeah, in theory, though.
In theory.
In practice, I don't understand. I mean, okay, so if it's collapsing, if he predicted all this stuff, which is what I gather, he predicted that the police would be, you know, arresting protesters and cracking down so hard on them and things like that. So when it's actually coming true...
He can't handle his own predictions.
It's really bizarre, isn't it?
Well,
it's almost as though he didn't think his own predictions were worth anything.
Okay, so now we will open the laws of media. The CBC will try to quote to explain Rupert's dilemma.
I'm channeling. What am I channeling to open up the page?
No, a Ouija board. This is Ouija board. You just sort of move. Watch the marker move. But
here's great. Yeah.
Miroslav is opening Laws of Media. He has it well read, marked up. When did you start reading this, Laws of Media? 10 years ago? 2 weeks ago?
6 years ago.
6 years ago, okay.
Still haven't finished it.
Really?
Yeah.
Let me see. You go to the end, it is not marked up. Oh, okay. So, but it's well marked here. So he has many old bookmarks. You got Kleenexes and things.
Oh, yeah, no. Anything I just grab whatever I can because I'm
hold it there. And so he just opened at random and he got to page 98, right?
Correct. In Laws of Media, Which edition is this? That's important. If anybody's following along at home.
Yeah, what? I didn't know there were editions.
There should be, right?
I don't know. It only got published once.
This is printed in Canada, 1988. No, there's a newer one.
Oh, okay. Definitely. All right. So that's the original one.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, that's the one I have.
The very first. Oh, University of Toronto Press, Toronto, Buffalo, London. Yep. Great. So, what do we have here? This is great because I this is my favorite aspect of McLuhan, the tetrad.
Okay.
And so,
which is the line that
our laws of media are intended to provide a ready means of identifying the properties of and actions exerted upon ourselves by our technologies and media and artifacts. What does the artifact enhance or intensify or make possible or accelerate?
So this is the beginning of the tetrad? They first lay it out?
Yeah, I guess so.
The four aspects. Okay, so we know the tetrad.
Quite apart from the use of weaponry at a distance, there is the effect of the changes in man himself that results from using his own devices to create environments of service.
Okay, so what are you asking me a question? Are you gonna, or are you presenting something about this? What do you get out of
it? I was presenting, and I wanted to know...
when you present a paper, you don't know. I want to know. You're supposed to tell us what you know.
That's not true at all. You obviously haven't presented many papers, sir.
Oh, is that okay? Yeah. Tell me about it.
No, you do. You set out what you would like to know, and then you go through and the question.
When I went to the McLuhan Symposium in March 98, everybody presented in a knowing, like, this is where it's at. This is what we know.
Well, that's not the new science. Yeah. Not the old science either.
So you mean people in academia, they present papers and say, I would like to know what the hell this is about.
I would like to know what they do in academia too, man. I don't know.
Okay. So, all right. So,
but I do know what they do in science, which is to, you know, to propose they're abstract about what they want to investigate, you know, and ask the question, and you form a question. That's how you come up with...
So you're forming a question here.
Yeah.
Okay, so what is your question?
How the hell does this relate
to Mike Rupert,
to my philosophy?
So he came to this conference on McLuhan to see how the hell McLuhan could relate to anything.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you would
I figured you were the guy. I'm sober.
Yeah, I am the guy, yeah. So you would do a tetrad on Occupy Wall Street.
Sure.
So how would you do that? So you would...
start with what it enhances.
I'm just thinking, what part of Occupy Wall Street?
Yeah, exactly. I was thinking the original Zuccotti encampment.
Yeah, because I read some article a while ago on, you know, the leftists, those radicals that went to the city hall first, and then they... split off, and then they came back together. It was all accidental. The whole thing was accidental. So,
well, it was this idea that was placed. It was a meme that was placed in by Adbusters, the magazine, and they had said, you know, that's what they should do. But they didn't have really any other idea.
What would go on afterwards?
They just said you should be down there and not let them see you because they're nice Canadians.
Yeah,
so they figured, you know. People make a lot of noise and bother people. They're gonna the people that they're bothering are gonna come down and say, "Oh, please, you know, stop. What can we do for you?" You know.
All right. So
this doesn't happen in New York City.
Right. And wasn't the protest, the actions in front of the city hall before the Adbusters announcement?
No.
Were those city hall actions a response to the Adbusters?
The city hall actions are what? It was before
June.
Oh, in June.
June. Yeah.
Maybe that was the beginning then.
Well, it was the beginning.
There was...
No, no. This, I'm meeting a person I've never met before. We're having a seminar.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, yeah. So, I never wear my shirt, right?
I know
you
don't. Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. Oh, okay. But, no, I'm his bodyguard, so I'm protecting him.
Yeah, we're faking.
He's out of line.
No, no. All she does, every day I walk by when I see her go, the waves are huge. She claims there's no waves. I go, they were huge today.
No waves, I'm going to die.
Yeah, yeah. She gets depressed when there's waves. Okay, see you later.
She should get manic and depressed when there's waves.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, because what's happening now, this is the mild season.
So it's not choppy. And
yeah, no, it's no waves.
Not at all. Yeah.
It'd be rare we'll get some nice waves, so it's going to be bland here.
I saw some at night a little. I guess it gets a little bit...
Over on the other side of the island. that's where the waves are.
Oh, okay.
And now, and then switches to sort of over here in the summer, our summer.
Oh, okay.
We're into the winter now, so it's flat here. So she told me a couple weeks ago, I see her as I walk back and forth, and she's always speed walking, and she said, oh, I guess there's no reason to come anymore, there's no waves, you know, because it's the season. And I said, no, no, they're huge. She said, go away. I said, yeah, they're huge. They show up for me, just for me. So this is the ongoing...
you're like a moon.
Yeah, yeah. Moon unit. You know who that is? Zappa? Moon unit?
I don't listen to Zappa.
Okay, okay. Back to that. We won't hold that against everybody. We're at the tetrad.
Yeah.
So I'm just thinking, it occurs to me now that there, you have to do a tetrad on the TV landscape version of Occupy Wall Street. And a tetrad on what the people think who are doing it. What the original people thought they were doing. The original lefties and anarchists and that. And then you have to do what the chip world, the spreading of it around the world. So you don't, like, Occupy Wall Street, you can't say what that is to do a tetrad, right?
Yeah.
So we agree with that. So what would we
need to break it down?
To the chemical bodies who are actually doing it, or to the media's image of it? Because obviously it's run its course in the media, in the sense it's flipped into obsolescence,
right,
and they're not interested anymore, you know,
yeah,
because any story suffers that. So, but let's take it, then we could take the meaning that people think Occupy Wall Street is. So what's the masses think it is? So they think it's a bunch of people expressing a sense of crisis.
Yeah.
You know, that, and the people generally supposedly say they're right. There's a fucking crisis here, right? So, Occupy Wall Street enhances urgency.
Urgency.
Urgency. Urgency, social, global. It enhances urgency on a wide scale. It's an idea that everybody is victimized by this, the whole world.
Because we were in a slow burn, and what they want to do, especially even with the hunger strike itself, what they want to do is sort of rush things along further, you know?
Yeah,
they want to intensify.
They want to, now that guy there, the one with the red orange bathing suit, he swims, I don't know if it's with these people, but he swims. You know, if you go, we could step way up there, you look way along there, you see this hotel building.
Oh, in the Grand, the Grand Wailea?
No, no, we can't do it here, but anyways, way down there, which I was wondering if it was the building you're staying in. I'm not sure, we have to look at it, we can't see from here. He swims from way down where you are to here every day.
He swims.
Yeah. But where'd he go? The guy in the orange?
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of people disappear. We have a vortex here.
Yeah.
He was right here and he's gone. Like, he couldn't have walked out of it.
He couldn't have showered in that.
Yeah, yeah, he couldn't have.
Time either.
He can't walk that fast.
No.
Yeah, so anyway.
Maybe swim that fast.
Yeah. So he, yeah, and his name's Bob, but that's his achievement. He does this every day. He swims a great stretch of water and then comes up here, showers, and he often walks back that way. The famous walkway that you see pictures of and you walk yourself.
What is it called? What is that called, this promenade there?
This whole thing, I don't know. Don't know if it has a name. It's just in front of all the big hotels.
Yes, but it ends right here.
Yeah.
Basically, right? This doesn't go back to the...
And right over there, just around the corner, is Clint Eastwood's house.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, it's just a little more exclusive over there. Okay, so back to... So Occupy and Wall Street enhances a sense of macro urgency that involves everybody. You hear the kids talking about... the whole system needs to be changed.
Yeah.
That kind of is, any of your average people are saying that. There's something wrong with the system. So it enhances urgency about the meaning of the collapse.
Right.
The collapse has already happened, I would say. And then now they're saying, okay, so let's just make it simple. Enhances urgency, obsolesces...
obsolesces, not
agendas.
Numbers.
Agendas. A particular... point of view about what a particular agenda. It's including everybody's agenda in the larger urgency, right?
Well, you'd think so. That's what they would like to project.
Yeah, yeah. They wanted to project that they because at first everybody was saying what's their agenda and criticized them. The media criticized them for not having one. And then people saw the savviness of doing that. They can't be pinned down, and they were proud that they couldn't be pinned down.
Right.
So they're. They're obsolescing a particular social agenda because the urgency is bigger than all of that.
Mm.
And then it retrieves community, but what would be a better way of saying that? It retrieves a new kind of tourism in New York City. The tourist becomes a political activist.
A new kind of disaster tourism.
Yeah, yeah. Are you thinking of, what's her name, Naomi Klein?
Yeah.
Yeah. Disaster tourism. Yeah. And then...
In my school, people did documentaries. Basically, it's just about, like, for instance, the Indonesian... was it Malaysia or Indonesia that had a big tsunami?
Two years ago, that's in the Indonesia.
There was one documentary that one of the students that I went to school with did. And it was nothing but basically an expose on this white couple that ended up dying in that tsunami.
Oh, yeah?
And what they did was they died because they weren't smart enough to sort of get away from the beach.
Mm.
And they just kept taking a picture,
a
video of the damn tsunami,
till
it was upon them.
Well, how did they know about them? But how did the documentary know about them?
I guess...
They found footage?
There was footage of them videotaping it, I guess, right before.
I remember seeing one quick scene. I didn't see too many media scenes, but I remember one of these people were down the beach, and the water came running in, and then they just get swept away.
Right.
I mean, that might have been them.
Yeah, it could have been.
Yeah.
But this whole documentary just really like made me kind of upset because, or even angry because... This whole documentary was nothing but basically presenting that story.
Yeah.
And then talking about how much Indonesians are exploited by white people. And to me, it was like, there's nothing related to that. Like she was trying to do this Baudrillardian
thing. Nothing
related. She was like, oh, to them nothing was real because the Indonesians were there to be used or something.
Wait. Who's Baudrillard? Okay, just, you're saying the maker...
They were in a simulation because Indonesians weren't real. To them or something like that.
To the white people?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, so it's a critique of the white people and how they didn't know the Indonesians were real.
Right.
Or even where they were was real.
Yeah.
They thought it was something to be photographed.
Right.
Okay, well, that's interesting. Well, that's okay. And, well, the person... So you didn't like that documentary's position?
Yeah, because, I mean, it's first of all, disrespectful. I mean, people got caught in a friggin' tsunami. It's like... Not because they're white that they died, it's because they were taking a picture of the thing.
Yeah,
not because they were exploiting Indonesians that they died.
That's right.
It's like people saying that, that we brought on somehow 9/11, you know.
Baudrillard says that. Well, Baudrillard says it was a felt need.
Baudrillard's dead, though.
Yeah, it's all right. Now, wait a minute. So, the filmmaker, the documentary maker, is bringing chemical body issues and class, gender, and... global capitalism or imperialism into a phenomenon that's explained by this couple not realizing where they were. It didn't matter that they were white or anything. They, like anybody, was virtual and thought it was a virtual event.
Yeah.
And this person is using the virtual event, the virtual aspect that she believes is true. These people were, but then she's putting in chemical body explanations for it. That's where the error is, right?
Well, I get. What do you mean by chemical body?
Well, she's putting it back into exploiting actual Indonesians. She's saying they are stupid, not because of the class relations or the imperialist economy. They're stupid because they got suckered into the virtual photographic life they lived and didn't know anything was chemically real.
Yeah, but I mean, it's up for debate. To me, the main thing that I took offense to was she didn't know what was in their hearts or minds in the moment.
Right. Okay.
No idea. They could have been so stunned. They could have relegated themselves to that reality and not wanted to deal with it, so they dealt with it through a video camera instead. You know, that could be the terror that they couldn't take.
The guy's smoking,
it's
people.
It's the wind, man.
Yeah. I said Miroslav, who I'm going to call Myron now, because I can't try to always remember.
Waves are coming, isn't
it? Well, occasionally, yeah. Miroslav. Myron here is actually smoking, and I accepted that if the wind would blow it away, but it's coming towards me. Anyways, I'm being very tall.
Now,
there's actually no wind here. Okay. Okay, are you saying that the woman who made the film, the documentary, the video, she doesn't fully understand the implications of the virtual reality that she's using to explain something?
Yeah, I think so. I think that, I think that... The thing is, okay, from a rationalist viewpoint, right? You don't want to start with your answer
and
then find the evidence that agrees with it, because human bias is such that you'll find it. I mean, in anything.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like you don't start with that, and that's the problem with a lot of.
Okay, what has she done? What she has started with?
I don't really know her well.
Right? Okay, but she has started with the idea that people are duped by the simulacra.
Yeah.
And then they go, and then she tries to relate that to class relations. Well, that doesn't work. You see, you can't relate the discarnate effect to chemical
bodies.
Yeah,
so let's say there is a simulacrum. Like, the point is that everybody's in it.
Yeah.
Not that there's one Uber mensch that
that's right.
is a part of it, apart from it.
That's right. Okay, so she's saying, you say she doesn't have any feeling for the accident they experienced. And she's saying this is an example. Like, she's using the simulacrum idea to relate to physical reality, and that's not what happened there. Right. That's her error.
That's what she would like to believe.
Yeah. Okay, so why are we talking about this?
Well, I don't know. So many of these, I think we should keep going with it.
Yeah, yeah.
So many of these things are, you know, a case of that. A case of like, oh, you know, we come from, you know, we want to prove this sort of thing. We want to, like, if you see the world in terms of class exploitation, everything will look like class exploitation. I mean, it's not.
Okay, how do you look at it? If you look at it in a detached state, like the objective scientist, then the world appears objective, and everybody appears objective.
That's a good question.
Yeah,
I think so. I think probably
everybody is objective.
Rational actors. I mean, yeah. To economists. I mean, that's kind of the way that, or positivists.
Yeah.
You know. You can acknowledge biases when you're thinking about that, but also in the end, you think people make their own decisions and take responsibility for their own actions, and
they're all rational.
Nobody's controlling others and this and that. I mean, not in the cosmic sense.
Right. The objective science is that people are objective within their own context and they're rational the way they do it.
If given the tools to be rational, I think that's the case. Yeah.
So then McLuhan came in and put together a lot of studies that had happened leading up to him and said, no, the objectivity has another level that's subverting it that we never noticed before. That was the means of communication. Like, the scientists said we're objective, we're rational in our communications, but we didn't notice the different types of communication. That's
right.
What McLuhan is maybe pointing out.
Right. And I think that enhances the rational. I mean, that's the whole point of uncovering biases. You can uncover them not so that you can talk about them around a picnic table. You uncover them so that you can help others become more, act more rationally.
Yeah, expand the meaning of what one would be reasonable about. Expand the
Existence
of rational reasonableness.
Exactly.
So
I think that's the whole point of what he did in the end, was to show another vector of
right.
of bias, of human, you know. And I think it's a really important one. I mean, to know that our tools shape us is huge.
And everybody says we shape, they quote that from the album. I think it's from the Medium is Massage album.
Yeah.
Or the book, The Medium is Massage. It says,
probably from
first,
both. I think there's a picture in there.
Because the album is made up of quotes from the book. So
yeah.
It says, first we shape our tools, and then our tools
shape
us.
Thereafter,
Yeah, well, you can listen to the album. And I've pointed this out before on the Mediacology list. Later, it's repeated. And first, we shape our tools, then our tools ape us. Now think of that, not shape us, that's a given. The aping us is the digital phase, what I call
gender. So they come to act like us.
They become your organic robotoid double. You get cloned. Think of it this way. So they ape us, and my thesis about the Android meme is that it gradually becomes invisible, and we think there is no technologies there. They've aped us so much, we think they're us. And one way on that route is you have doubles. You have people that are simulations of yourself, or, you know, organic clones or something. That's technology aping you, miming you exactly, literally.
Hmm.
So that's the aping rather than shaping. Shaping is what you learn in 100 years ago. Joyce, the vortices. They understood the shaping factor.
That's a sculpting thing.
And then you bring in Brave New World, you know, Aldous Huxley, and then clones and things like that. Well, that's the aping aspect. And I say that the general content of the Android meme of the past 20, 30 years, they call it the dumbing down of media, the dumbing down of culture. No, it's the machine trying to be the way humans are, and it sees that we're quite emotional, irrational beings.
I mean, the people who say that it's dumbing down don't know a lot of very many people, or a diverse set of people, because people are dumb, in a way.
Yeah, and they're not dumb. They're
rational. Not dumb, but they would think that they were dumb if they really acknowledged their own perceptions of people.
Right, but the Android meme is showing a lot of bad news the last 30 years.
Coker calls it the media simulacrum has gone into the dark sign, the negative sign. Everything's under the negative thing. Crashes, apocalypse, bad news has spread over the last 30 years. And I say that's the Android meme, doing humanity back to itself. Because the Android technology saw that humans had a lot of bad news happening all the time. And they liked the bad news. So that general. Oh.
Just making sure.
We're at the 30-minute mark.
We are. Sun is starting to set.
Well, it's clearing
out.
The sun will actually hit the horizon in 45 minutes. Because generally the past few weeks, there's no sun today. We can't see it.
We can now. It's peeking through, see?
Oh.
Yeah.
If we go there, it'll take 45 minutes to get to the water line.
Every lawn in this state is immaculate.
Yeah,
taken care of. I don't understand it.
Yeah, it's perfect. Like
water's kind of cool. I guess it's December. I mean, you'd expect it.
I don't know. I guess.
It's just a cool day and
I've often pondered that because it's erratic, it's warm, it's cold.
Yeah.
And I think it might be the degree of heat during the day. And the ocean responds real fast.
Sure.
And then it cools off real fast.
Yeah, because, I mean, only the top layer of water, like water is in layers, you know,
yeah.
In the ocean. So only the top layer is actually coming to us.
Right.
With the shore.
Yeah. So did you go in? Or just
not completely, just my legs.
It felt cold.
Yeah, it's...
It's a disappointing day for you. It's cloudy. It's cold. Why you never
it's
left
the worst.
New Jersey?
I'm going home tomorrow.
Exactly. We're coming. Leaving New Jersey. He ends up worse than New Jersey.
Oh, but it's 30 degrees. So I'll take this over any of that.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Is it snowing yet there in New Jersey?
It snowed on Halloween weekend.
Okay.
Big snow.
Really?
Devastated the whole. We had a week of blackouts.
Wow.
Connecticut had no power for a week.
Jeez.
Ridiculous. Talk about collapse.
Yeah, what'd you do? There's media calls.
I wasn't in Connecticut.
Oh, yeah.
I live in New York City.
Oh, okay.
We had power. I don't know how they do it. Maybe rats running treadmills.
Right.
I don't know how they generate all the power, but we didn't lose it.
Okay, so we got Mike Hooper. We're still talking about Occupy Wall Street. We're trying to do a tetrad on Occupy Wall Street, and we got into the value of McLuhan.
We did enhance. We did obsolesce.
What does it flip into then? Which is extreme.
That's the part, yeah, let's see.
Well, did it get going yet? Is it just still happening? When did the opposite characteristics happen? So if you're saying, you know...
It probably slips into nihilism.
No, into hunger strikes.
Well, isn't that nihilism?
I don't know. No, I don't know if that's nihilism.
Well, if they're trying to...
Well, Mike Rupert is upset. He thinks it's collapsed. He thinks that it's
He's living in the future of.
Okay, so
I mean, everything with him is next week is
going
to happen.
And
next
it never
week,
happened.
Coming down.
And never happened.
Well, he said the euro was going to collapse, you know, a week from September 17th, and it didn't completely. It
didn't completely,
know.
But see, that's what he doesn't understand is that.
Well, it's hyperbole. I mean,
everything all completely collapsed, but it's what's called an asymptote. The XY axis, and so the curve goes up and never reaches the Y, vertical Y, never touches, like Half-Life.
Hmm.
It never can finish, and this is what McLuhan said.
Right, because there's the infinite number between two points.
Yeah, so there is no finish line, McLuhan said, under electric conditions. So he's waiting for a decided conclusion, and McLuhan said that...
It's more of it's a circuit within the McLuhan.
Yeah, circuitry. And unstoppability, if you're looking for linear conclusion... You'll never get there, and you'll think it's unstoppable, and that can drive people crazy. Unstoppability.
Because it's circuitous circuit. It's
multi-level. It's in non-visual. Now McLuhan said a circle. He went like that one day. He says that's visual space. It's circular.
Right.
No, visually it's circular. But circuitry is going nowhere.
Yeah.
It's radiating, vibrating frequencies. Something.
But you need to close the circuit, though, don't you?
We do that by turning off the circuit.
Hmm.
See, it's not visual. And you'll see in culture, the counterculture, a lot of retrieval of the Ouroboros, the snake biting its tail, or the yin-yang. Those are visually biased symbols. They don't get to the tactile quality of circuitry, which is simultaneous everywhere. There's no movement in circuitry.
It's an audio.
Audio is one part of it.
Yeah.
Tactile.
It takes the the properties of sound. Sound, it's a sonosphere, you know?
No, circuitry, they don't know what electricity is. Circuitry is not a sense, but it's the extension of tactility. So it's not a sense, it's a interplay of sensory data.
Okay.
So the acoustic is the closest content, the closest to tactility,
right,
that simulates the simultaneity acoustic sphere. Gets too close to not a visualization of tactility, but the simultaneity of it. But it is not tactility. That's why, or it's not an oral culture.
Yeah, this seems to be probably the hardest thing to get his mind around. I think tactility and what McLuhan meant by it.
That's right. And well, he said the best way is to collage, to show relationships like a page of Finnegan's Wake.
Yeah.
You've got to show something and see it. And when you say get your mind around, that is trying to see and visualize what can't be visualized. And McLuhan sees the whole 20th century in art, science, literature, and everywhere, in movies, trying to visualize what the electric fact. And the electric fact can't be visualized. You can't see electricity. It is a result of a relationship of a bunch of minerals and matter and pipes and wires, right? That's what seems to be the efficient causality of electricity. But its effect of simultaneity is even more non-visible. So I think one can understand that. One can understand that there is a non-visible, non-acoustic reality.
Yeah.
And science calls it subatomic physics. Yeah, ESP, right?
Yeah.
I use that. McLuhan used that. We've extended ESP, the old-fashioned meaning of ESP. And then you have subatomic particles. They're in two. They violate visual laws.
Yeah.
And now you've got the neutrinos go faster than the speed of light. That's another way to bypass any visual parameter you've got. We thought the speed of light, visuality, going real fast, was the standard. But it isn't.
No. Well, it always seemed to me pretty arbitrary speed limit, didn't it? I mean,
yeah.
Why should nothing go faster than light? It's just, you know.
Yeah, it was a poor job, poor attempt at visualizing tactility.
Because light, I mean, it's literally, we visualized it because it's light, and that's why we picked light.
Right. Okay, so now, do you understand tactility now at this moment a little better? Have you stopped getting it? You say it's hard to get.
I think a little better. I think collage does a great job of
collage shows you, it frustrates, like Zappa's Lumpy Gravy in 67, just like the medium is massage, it frustrates a visual categorization, either by word or by, so this is what he's saying, you know, and you write it out or something. It frustrates. Collage should frustrate coming to a stopping position and thinking you have a perspective.
So let's go into thinking about...
So Rupert and Occupy, well, let's stay on also...
Yeah,
Occupy.
What I mean, I was going to say the hunger strike.
Yeah.
Can we do a tetrad on the hunger strike as a tactic?
Well, when we used to do a tetrad with McLuhan, there was always like a serious level and a joking level.
Yeah.
So people would come up with different suggestions, and any suggestion was open. He didn't know what the answer was. We just listened to see who said what. And so you could take a joke view of it. So, I mean, hunger strikes obsolesce the body. They flip into death, right? Or, maybe that's not, that may be too obvious. Hunger strikes flip into, on the body level, definitely flip into death.
Yeah.
But then on a cultural level, sociological, trying to get an impact through the TV landscape.
Well, it was like flip into a glut of media, of information.
Yeah, they flip into... people demanding a strike of the story itself because they're sick of hearing about it.
That could be, yeah.
McLuhan had a in the do line, he had a little booklet called Strike the Set, which means take it down, stop having the TV environment, strike the set. Mm-hmm. So hunger strikes flip into the coverage of the hunger strike gets set, gets stopped.
Yeah.
Struck. So that's another way.
The hunger strike extends to, basically,
the hunger striker is
struck. Yeah, so it's also the rest of us go on a hunger strike by corollary, you know.
That's right. We
a hunger strike for the media.
We actually, yeah. We,
media strike.
We get into disgust. We get disgusted.
There you go.
Flips into disgust.
There you go. Well, that's why I said glut.
Yeah,
because,
yeah.
You know, we've had too much. If you had too much, you don't want to, you know.
So was Bloomberg aware, they just let the Occupy movement go for a couple months because they knew that people would get fed up with it in some way. The media coverage
I don't know if they knew that. I think, I don't know. It seems to me that they just, I mean, it's hard because at the same time, if you're in New York, that's like the biggest story going. 2.5 months.
Well, that's tourism. People go down there to see it and be part of it.
Right. Well, and you can't. They try to get in your face about it and stuff. And
so the Occupy Wall Street enhanced New York's tourist budget, or tourist profits, right? It brought tourists in.
Yeah.
It enhanced. It retrieved many people, like Eric McLuhan says, retrieved sit-ins, the 60 citizens. Paul Krasner thought it was one of the founders of Yippie. I think he even coined the word Yippie. Heard him on Bob Fast WBAI saying it was a retrieval of the Yippies. Is there any retrieval of the Seattle riots of 99? Those guys. What else did it retrieve? It retrieved the emotion of multitude, that we're all in this together. And because people were shocked that the New Yorkers or whoever were sending food to these people. It struck a chord for a while, right? That everybody said, yeah, let's help these people. And so that's the emotion of multitude.
Yeah.
And rock music brought in the emotion of multitude. Okay, so it also retrieved that generation as an image in the media. The lost, every generation. That's in CB, the lost generation except for the boomers.
Right.
But
they carved out the niche for that generation.
It defined her. What is this generation? Do they have a name yet? The 20-year-olds?
Generation Why Not?
Yeah, the E-gen. Someone said E something the other day. The E generation. And that's like everything's email.
Right.
So.
Or I.
Yeah.
The I generation. Maybe.
No, they're...
The iPod generation.
Okay.
iPod, iPad, iTab, or
I Occupy?
Yeah.
So,
Me.
Yeah, okay, so the retrieval... Do you think there's any... Do you think that because the Tetrad has retrieval and flipping, and even though it's simple, it's different from any other module that was offered because it looks at it brings in many more factors.
Well, I mean, there's a way that they interplay as well, right?
Yeah.
Retrieval deals with enhancement.
Well, there's ratios.
Right.
The obsolescence to the enhancement is retrieval is to the flip. Things like that.
Yeah.
So, let's see, what is it? See, what I've said is that we're in the Pentad, and I see the Android meme presenting the four levels, the four laws, the four actions of the Tetrad. They do that to every story. The Android meme, which is the general consensus in the news about what's going on, they all pretend it's all the same interpretation. So the first interpretation was Occupy Wall Street was they had no agenda. And then the later interpretation, well, maybe there's something more to this. And but I don't know what it is now.
Well, now it depends on splintered off into factions. I mean, I don't think that Fox News would agree with MSNBC on what.
Right.
I mean, for MSNBC or NPR, those people are heroes. It's funny because, you know, you listen to WNYC, I heard it on, and they had one segment, and they're good about this stuff, you know.
WNYC is good.
Yeah. I mean, you know, people say they have a liberal agenda, and they do, because most of them are liberal. But, I mean, at the same time, I don't think that's a bad thing necessarily. Like,
yeah.
What are you going to be like if you're not leftist or don't have those sympathies? What are you going to be a hard hitting reporter on, like, you know, how happy everybody is or how things stay the same?
Right. That's a good point. Yeah, the media, the journalists have to be point out the bad news,
yeah.
Which is the
yeah,
critique.
Yeah, there has to be an impetus for investigation.
Impetus. Yeah, and that's a critique.
Yeah.
So that tends to the left, not happy.
Right.
But there are people who've been going for years. There are people saying, why don't we have, you hear this occasionally, a critic, some kind of naive, maybe conservative critic will say, why don't we just have lots to talk about what great things happen today? You know, and now this is a key McLuhan point, is that the reason there's bad news, and there can only be bad news, is that the good news is the advertising. Now, he says advertising threatens everybody, because it says, what you have is obsolete. You want to have this new thing.
Yeah.
And that'll piss you off, that you have to adjust and buy the new thing or preserve your identity on the old thing. So advertising is actually bad news. And he said all the normal bad disasters and deaths and rapes and whatever, all that stuff, that's called bad news, actually has a good news effect because it makes the consumer of the news survivor.
Yeah.
So good news is Ed.
Because bad news only happens to other people.
Right? Yeah. And so you get to see it didn't happen to you.
Right.
So you survived. So that's the service of bad news. So that's the good, quote, good. And the good news threatens everybody's identity, the ads.
Right.
So to miss the dynamic of that, that's why it's slowly say we need to have good news.
Yeah.
They don't even begin to see the relationship between the paying ads and the content.
Yeah, no, and Fox News had tried to do that for
yeah.
a while, and then they've completely gone off the rails since then because they realized it couldn't work.
Well, I don't know if they did that. You still look at Bill O'Reilly and these guys, they're very negative about everybody else.
Now they are, yeah.
No, Bill O'Reilly always was negative.
No, Bill O'Reilly, sure, yeah.
Okay, so what is...
But Fox News, I mean, like, they had those morning shows that basically were just fluff. You know.
Is that right? I didn't find them. So you're saying that they tried to have a happy,
basically.
America.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, it's dawn in America.
Right.
Like Reagan-esque type
yeah,
of thing.
Yeah.
Everything's great.
And they have they don't they've changed that? They don't do that?
No, they still do it. It's just not as it's not as apparent. I don't know. It's not
people don't look.
They've relegated to the corner kind of thing in the mornings where people are trying to get peppy and perked up. Kind of like morning radio.
Okay, so what is Fox News generally doing now?
Generally now, it's all about basically the negatives of Obama and the the liberal stuff. You know, so it's the same old.
Oh, I
thing
see what you mean. You mean Fox News during the Bush era was all trying to say this is great, this is great, this is the right kind of president.
Right, we'll report on how happy everybody is.
Yeah. Okay, so they had to flip. All right, well that's normal.
But also, that's the funny thing about Michael Moore, that movie about guns. Which one? Roger and Me, was it?
Columbine?
Yeah, that one.
Yeah.
It wasn't called Columbine, but he goes into why he goes to Canada.
Yeah.
And he talks about, okay, well, they have more guns than we do per capita.
And they
leave their doors open.
Yeah.
And yet, no thing. And then what does he do when he goes into that? He goes into some Canadian news coverage. He does like a montage of Canadian news coverage
right.
of how happy everybody is.
Yeah.
Basically, like a happy story. And he's trying to say that because we report on the murders that occur, murders occur or something.
Yeah, yeah.
To that effect. I don't think he realizes that he's doing that. But it's actually a pretty interesting point to make, isn't it?
Your point?
No, the point that Michael Moore would be trying to make if he said, you know, the reason that murders occur here
Because we
report on murders here.
Yeah, see, that's the copycat thing, and people don't copycat.
No, they don't.
They want to be opposite. They're
right.
contrarian, so it doesn't work. Yeah, Michael Moore seems to be naive. What's that weird?
Luau, I think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, that's...
I think they do probably a luau every night at the hotel.
Yeah, but I never smelled that gas smell, but they do... Well, eventually going to put the torch on the lights, but it's too early, so an odd ghost of luau smell has come
through. Luau's past. The ghost of luau's past.
Okay, so what were you just saying? It was the last word?
Just the Michael Moore.
Oh, he's naive. And
yeah.
He went, like, I can't...
You know that he lives in the same building as Gary.
I know that. Yeah. And matter of fact, I could tell you some stories about that. The many times you see... Gary, we'll just say, interacting with Michael in the lobby and giving Michael advice on how the health movie was not done properly.
that's delicious.
Yeah, but and I've seen that. But we're talking about Michael Moore. You're saying that the liberal media consider the Occupy Wall Street people heroes? This is what's ridiculous.
Well, here's the thing. Well, I guess why I mentioned WNYC was because there was a segment that they did on all the dissenters. So they did all this coverage of OWS. And then three weeks ago now, they had a day. It was the same week that they got screwed out and kicked out. And it was towards the end of that week, they had a whole segment, like half hour, on dissenters. Like people who don't like Occupy Wall Street, don't think they stand for
that. Oh, yeah?
And that, and it was really interesting.
Who did
Brian
that?
Lehrer.
Oh, this is on the liberal media. Who did?
It's on WNYC.
Okay, yeah.
On Brian Lehrer.
Yeah, and they showed...
And it was amazing because the guy, I mean, there was this one guy that they let stay on for about 15 minutes, a caller, and he was sitting there reciting the numbers of basically the salaries of Brian Lehrer, the salary of Leonard Lopate, all the way to the top of NPR.
Yeah.
He's reciting these salaries, and they're pretty stunning. I mean, $300,000.
One percenters.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the thing. And he was just yelling. He was totally taking WNYC to task for reporting on nothing but the positives of Occupy Wall Street.
The hypocrisy of what the... In other words, you got Brian Lehrer. Now, this is where the four bodies come in. You got Brian Lehrer. This caller is saying, you guys are the one percenters, yet you're making, like, you're supporting the 99 percenters. Their image is they think the 99% are heroes.
Yeah, he was basically saying, like, these people have, and he wasn't, you know, off the rails crazy or anything. I mean, he was speaking for a lot of people who I've talked to personally who, you know, have been inconvenienced by them.
Yeah.
Who this and that, they wouldn't mind. They don't mind protests. People protest every day in New York. Three different protests are going on at all times.
Yeah.
You know, but they don't. They didn't get a permit. They pushed the boundaries of free speech. They occupied a park that isn't just for. It's got this weird state where it's supposed to be for everybody. You know,
yeah.
So that's the only reason that it's open 24 hours is because it's supposed to be left open for everybody.
Right.
That's the deal that the corporation gets.
Yeah.
You know, that's why they can build on that site kind of thing. And but they're taking that privilege away from everybody else.
Right.
Sort of thing. When they try to go over the Brooklyn Bridge and go onto the roadway, they're going to block it off from cars getting through, people getting to work, you know, things like that. And it's true. I mean, and you know.
So the inconvenience.
There's a lot of inconvenience factor. There's a lot of factor of, you know, all the overtime that the city has to pay cops.
Now, that would be part of the enhancement if you did a tetra. It enhances traffic jams, excess overtime costs, enhances those kind of things. You'd have to put them in the enhancement, right?
Right.
It enhances huge inconvenience for the average New Yorker.
Yeah, exactly.
But I'm not getting so...
Which they're pretty okay... I mean, New Yorkers are pretty okay with inconvenience in general. I mean, you know, they'll complain, but I mean, it's a fact of life.
Not the cars. You can't interfere with the traffic.
Well, that's a car thing.
Yeah.
That's an automobile thing.
Right, but that's what everybody relies on, and they got to get the city, you got to keep the flow, and... the bikers, did they ever get the bike pathways put in? They never get that. Oh, they did?
Where? Down...
In Manhattan.
Yeah, yeah.
They give special...
Yeah, there's on Bleecker Street, there's some. And
Bleecker Street, like one street.
No, there are. There are bike lanes pretty well done, especially in Times Square now, because they closed off a whole chunk of Times Square.
And that's recent then, since I've left?
Very recent.
Yeah. Oh, okay, that's...
The past couple of years.
Okay, because they never did. So
now it's like pedestrian walkways, there's tables in the middle of... Broadway now.
Really?
Yeah, it's nice.
Wow. So the, because all when I was there for 17 years, a lot of bikers get killed and it was like, so what? Nobody cared because it was their fault.
A lot of pedestrians get killed.
Yeah.
Too, I mean, by cars. But at the same time, with bikers, it's kind of like, well, bikers, I mean, I see them myself. I yell at them because they go on the, bicyclists in the city.
Yeah.
They go on the sidewalk, you're not supposed to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
You have designated places to go. You go. Sometimes they go. You know, they'll run red lights. They don't care. It's in that.
Yep.
And it's like, you know, we're supposed to get out of the way for them.
And that's what you would see here in the media when I was there. The line was, these guys don't follow the rules, and I don't care if they get hit.
Yeah.
You know, and we're not going to make a bike lane for them. But now you're saying that's changed.
It's changed.
Yeah. Okay. So what? But
it's like the smoking ban. I mean, it's the same thing. You have a group of people that are loud, that hate one thing.
Yeah.
And that's what they revolve around.
That's how you get changed.
That's how you get changed.
Or true. Some kind of change.
It's absolutely true.
How much change, but some change.
It takes people with no day jobs that are pissed off about some behaviors of other people.
And people, I think, thought Occupy Wall Street would achieve that. If they get all these people pissed off and they stay on that point, and for some reason...
Well, what they didn't realize is that it's really hard to piss off people who, you know, for all intents and purposes, aren't even on Wall Street.
Mm.
They're on a yacht. Somewhere. I mean,
well, no. We're talking about piss. No, they weren't trying to piss off the one percenters, were they?
Yeah.
They were trying to get rid of them.
No. They're trying to piss them off.
And then what were the ones?
Stay there until they came down and talked to them, basically.
Oh, they wanted dialogue?
That was the whole point.
I didn't know that. They occupied Wall Street, wanted dialogue with the one percenters.
You haven't heard my interviews with the Occupy Wall Street people.
No, I haven't. I know very little of the stuff.
Yeah.
But I don't need to know much about.
No, I mean, they were inviting them down. I mean, it was a pipe dream and a half, but.
Oh, did you? You're talking about the Occupy Wall Street. You did get them to your network? Did they ever come?
No, but I did interviews, like, one-on-one. A few of them came to the studio. But also down there, I did, like, you know, 15.
They were asking for, that's interesting to me.
They wanted a dialogue at the very beginning. Within the first 2 weeks, they were saying, we're open to anybody coming down. We want, you know, a banker. And I saw a YouTube video of actually a banker went down there and said, I am the 1%.
Yeah. I heard about that.
This guy with a radio show, I think.
Okay.
But he's, I need another cigarette.
But back to, you were saying, I don't understand. So this guy's complaining about Lehrer. Lehrer and being one percenters, because the guy said you are supporting the 99 percenters and you are not one of them. Is that what his complaint was about?
Well, I think he was just sort of, you know, yeah, I mean, I guess he was throwing a lot of epithet kind of things out. Say, look, somebody doesn't like you, yeah.
What's that? Brewster McCloud. You ever see that movie?
No,
if that's in the early 70s, everywhere. Whenever a dramatic moment in the movie would happen, some pigeon would drop shit on him. Well, pigeon just tried to nail me, but missed by about 6 inches.
Synchronicity.
Where is it?
Maybe that's the raindrop you felt earlier.
Yeah, but didn't seem that heavy. But I'm not kidding. So
basically, he was throwing out a lot of things when Brian Lehrer was trying to claim the opposite, that they did do a lot of, they were being fair and balanced.
Objective?
In their reporting, and they weren't. Sort of saying that Occupy Wall Street was heroic in any way, or this and that. Saying that they've reported on both sides.
Is that true?
Equally.
Is that true?
I think they've tried. I think it's been and I think to them it's true.
Okay, but let's take that.
It hurts so much to say that Occupy Wall Street is any bad about them. It hurts them so much that it feels like they're doing more reporting on that than they actually are.
Okay, so what? Why do some people think these people are, the occupiers are heroes? Because I've heard that idea. They're heroes. I heard a lot of people say that.
I don't really know. I think that they themselves consider themselves heroes. Because, I mean, how are you going to, you're saying that we're fighting for you, the people who can't fight with us. Well, if it was so damn important, people would be fighting with you. People would be down there, and you'd have 10,000 people every day, you know, at least.
Okay, so let's look.
That's how I figure it, you know.
Let's look at your experience. Did you find that it was naive when you asked these people to come and speak a couple months ago on your network, the Occupy Wall Street? Did you think that maybe, say, this spread, if people got more coverage than that, would it lead somewhere? Did you think it would happen, or were you cynical about it?
From the beginning, I was skeptical for sure, because I saw the Tea Party go into it and saw them co-opted. I don't know that there's, I mean, I think that America has just evolved to be able to the co-optation that America can do to any, and I don't even know if I believe in the word co-optation necessarily.
No, it's the four-body dynamic. It's just the people require new content.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to, no news story can dominate for long.
Right.
That's a given. So why bother even getting some media coverage?
It's not about co-optation. It's about, you know, people, I think it's about people internalizing what the message was. So if they continue it now with this hunger strike and stuff, I think it's a disaster for them. But also, I think
how many are doing the hunger strike?
I'm not sure. There's no real numbers, I don't think, yet.
They're actually going to do this.
It's probably about 20 people.
And where are they going to sit?
They are trying to get Trinity Church to give them, to give up the park there.
Right. And that's where they're going to sit.
That's where they're going to be, I don't know. I don't see it working. I see them basically. I think that in the end, they just want Obama to romance them a bit more, and they'll be on his side again.
How could they implement how could the system be changed? What system has to be changed? Like what?
It's a slow process. Like any like science is a slow process. It's a slow process. Like a sculpture is a slow process. You know, you can't just hack the head off a sculpture and then it's beautiful again.
Okay, go back to Mike Rupert. He says everything's collapsed. Is that frustrating, the slow process? Is the collapse going to make the slow process never get arrived?
I don't think. I mean, in the nothing's ever arrived. I don't think.
Okay. So
including a collapse.
Do you think it's silly that Mike Rupert started to cry about the occupiers getting beat up?
No, I think it shows. I wouldn't call it silly at all. I would say that it shows an idealism.
An idealism.
It shows his own collapse.
Yeah. So,
but here's what I think. I think that they were idealists. I think that, I mean, I know for sure that they don't associate with the End of the Fed people. You know, I think I was saying this on one of the MUM seminars.
End of the Fed.
Yeah, the End of the Fed people, the Ron Pauls.
Yeah.
And they're still there, right in front of the headquarters of the radio station I work at, actually. They were out there saying impeach Obama kind of thing. They were also at Occupy Chicago.
Right.
And immediately, I mean, there was damage control from the get-go on Twitter and on Facebook. There was pictures shown of these people, the NSF people. There were about four of them in the picture. And they said, these people don't represent us. They don't speak for us at all. We're not associated with them, this and that. So already, they're already saying, okay, well, yeah, we're open to everything. We're open to, because we don't know what the hell we're talking about, so we're open to anything. but they do. I mean, in the end, and that's the whole thing. It's hypocrisy in a way.
Yeah.
Or maybe they don't know what they didn't know or whatever, you know, like Cheney.
Yeah. No, Rumsfeld.
Rumsfeld, sorry.
Yeah. But, yeah, see, that's what I was interested in. What did they think they were standing for? And the journalists...
It was a reaction without an endpoint.
No, yeah, but no, some of the journalists were saying, this is good to have an antidote to the Tea Party. Yeah. And, like, so everybody claims to be...
It was set up to the beginning, right? Because of the massive swings in the electorate that have been happening, right? Like, it was set up, the movie of Occupy Wall Street, if we're going to have it be a movie, there's only one endpoint, and that is for it to be the antidote to the Tea Party, because it swung too far in one direction, you know? And then now it's swinging in the other.
Oh, okay, so
that's something that I do think is actually happening in the American politics.
Right, okay, so that's what the Occupy Wall Street, they tried to ride on the swing of the pendulum, and that's why they could say, we're excluding those guys, because they had a sense of the TV landscape.
I didn't think they knew that that's what they were doing from the beginning.
They just didn't like the Tea Party, you know.
You talk to almost all of them, and they think the Tea Party was from the beginning a funded, just the same critique that's leveled at them about being funded by George Soros or something.
Yeah.
But at the beginning, the Tea Party wasn't. It was just a bunch of people who didn't know shit about politics, weren't scholars of, you know, anarchist thought. You know, they were just like mom and dad that had to take their kid, and they didn't have time to be protesters, but they did because they were that shaking, you know, about the way of being squeezed by both ends.
So you don't see the Tea Party having an influence on, or the Tea Party doctrine on the election. You think that's over?
No, they're still there. They clearly have.
So why are people saying that you said that movement's been co-opted?
The Tea Party?
Yeah.
Oh, because that's what it is now. Now Fox News jumped on the bandwagon because it was such a loosely based bandwagon. But anybody, I mean, the Tea Party candidate from Idaho is not the same as the Tea Party candidate from Florida. It's not the same as the Tea Party candidate that unseated the Kennedy seat in Massachusetts.
Yeah.
It's completely different. I mean, Tea Parties, you know, they wouldn't recognize one another. Each other in a room.
Okay, so...
So,
what's obsolete then? What is...
So, what happened was, Fox News stepped in, they saw there, and Murdoch is a consummate, I mean, he does this, he knows how to do this really well. He jumps on the bandwagon. That's why people think that he can swing an election in Britain.
Right.
They think that that's the case, but it's actually the case that he just has a really great sense of anticipation, and he knows who to get behind because he gets behind the eventual winner. It's not the other way around. It's not that he affects the winner.
He gets behind the one
that he can see so well is going to be the winner.
Right. So what...
So
the Tea Party is over and co-opted by Fox.
And Murdoch knew that they would be a force, and that's why, as early as he could, he started bringing them in. And I tried to be that for Occupy Wall Street, in a sense. You know, not that we're huge or anything, but I tried to bring them in and really give them a podium, you know, to get their word out. And at the same time, it could have been, you know, good for us and this and that. It would have been, you know... And that's the problem. They had all this time, all these blurbs on TV, and that's why my whole thing was... come in and do a roundtable discussion, a long-form thing, not you know, with whatever you can discuss and coordinate on the air. If it's really about the 99%, take calls, take suggestions. You know, you can't close yourself in like a cage animal into a park and expect everybody to come to you and to be, and just over Twitter to know, you know, the general feel of everybody. No, you know, you can coordinate from the top down doing that, but that's not what you're claiming to be. You're claiming to be, you know...
Bottom up.
Yeah, no, exactly. And that's the thing. I was talking about this on the very final month, that they did that analysis of the Tea Party tweets versus the Occupy Wall Street tweets, and they found the Tea Party tweets were actually more egalitarian, were actually more, you know, more, like, spread out, and the Occupy Wall Street ones was just a choice few leaders, thought leaders, top-down sort of thing, which would be shocking to people, because it's just kind of intuitive.
Okay, for me, I thought there was so much naivety going on and unsophisticated idiocy in the Occupy Wall Street, but was interesting how it became covered and pretended to be taken seriously. And the point you're making about how limited they were, I mean, it was stupid.
Yeah,
but
in a way.
What is, but okay, now here's where you bring in McLuhan. What did it express to people that allowed it to be a figure of great coverage? See, that's what he would say. Like, people would say back in the 50s, well, Elvis is stupid. You know, the older generation, this is stupid. Why do you, what's the felt response, the felt need? That's how we need to look at the, in McLuhan terms, the Occupy Wall Street.
Well,
so that would be, what does it enhance?
To bring it back to what you said about all the food that they were getting and all the donations.
Yeah.
Like, they got a lot of donations. And those people that were donating were not people that were squeezed by the economy. These were people who were, and they were, let's say, they were anonymous donors, you know, let's say. And they were, and sure, they had, like, the people coming by and giving them, throwing them a $10 bill or buying them pizza pies and stuff. But at the same time, they got $500,000 like that
right.
in a couple weeks. And all of a sudden, they found all this money. But the thing was, I think what it was, is, and what I heard in the background noise of a lot of the coverage was how many people supported them in theory, but still thought at the same time they had a double mind about it, because they knew that they were just dumb kids. But they weren't even caught up in the excitement of it. They just wanted to help them.
Here's that way
they
you do
to
it.
Help these dumb kids.
Yeah. You know
dumb
what
thing,
it was? The Occupy Wall Street enhanced the TV body, which is a more general consensus environment. It's an older consensus, more like the analog phase. The digital is very fragmented. So the digital body and all these people who are commenting on pro-con have these four bodies. So the digital body was guilty about the crisis of what was going on in America for the chemical body was not being covered enough in the TV landscape or TV body. So people's TV body supported something to be made an image in the TV landscape.
Yeah.
Right? And then they all, and then the digital, the kids thought they were going to get spread through the chip body, that they would get popularity.
Yeah, which is not the way it works,
yeah,
right?
It was the TV body that responded of the people. And they sent it, and
what would be chemical body support?
The TV body said, we need to give more coverage to this problem, and maybe we recognize, since they're emphasizing chemical body issues, we'll send them food.
Right.
So, but that was all done through the TV perception. But the occupiers themselves thought that they were a chip body phenomenon. And just like they thought the Arab Spring was a chip body phenomenon. Okay, it started with the Google guy and all that, right,
yeah.
In Cairo. So you take this. This is a concrete part of the Endor meme, the chip body, and another vast part of the Endor meme is the TV body. The chemical body got hoiked up as the apparent figure, but what was really assuaged or massaged was the TV body, lack, guilt, something, because that was one of the things I think I heard. Well, praise these guys are heroes because they put the crisis of the chemical body in the mainstream media, which was not covering it. That's the big story.
That's exactly what they pulled up as their
goal, their victory.
Their victory.
Yeah.
Was that now it's being talked about.
Yeah. That meant TV
I'm
body coverage.
I'm about that too, though.
No, it isn't. It's not because
inequality was being talked about before Occupy Wall Street was a gleam in Ed Buster's eye.
But see, this is where it has nothing to do with the occupiers. It was people watching, hearing about this on the news, and then they're saying, yes, my TV body has not been doing enough on that chemical body issue, and I'll send them food, and also I'll say this is their heroes for getting this into the mainstream thing.
Hmm.
But the kids and other people say, oh, no, it's because of the chip body that this is happening, and the chip body's going to take over the TV body. But it was really a retrieval.
That was the sort of, the other thing it retrieves is that whole techno-utopian vision of San Francisco's in the 70s or so. The Steve Jobs thing. And Steve Jobs just died during this whole
thing.
Oh,
that's a good point. Steve Jobs dies in the middle of it.
Yeah.
And it was like a wake for Steve Jobs and for the what the 70s Bill Gates and thought they were going to get out of the digital body. They didn't know it would fragment and create chaos. They thought information laws would be free and everybody could share the same message.
Yeah.
And then...
Well, the collective mind is better than the individual mind.
Yeah. So this Occupy Wall Street enhances the TV body. It retrieves the chemical body, or it enhances the chemical body, but really retrieves the TV body and makes it feel like it's useful. It obsolesces the chip body.
Right.
Because Steve Jobs died. It killed
yeah. Steve Jobs in the middle of it. Let Steve Jobs, icon of the chip party, you killed him.
That's right.
Victim of the occupation. Now, this is getting good. Now we're getting into Dobbsian kind of patterns, right? Yeah. And then pushing extreme, it flips into longer stream. What the heck is that? Bitterness, suicide. It flips into emphasizing that it's all about the chemical body. And we're going to show you about it's about the chemical body and not the TV body and the chip body.
Yeah.
It's like a fight within the tetrad. And right. It says, this is about the chemical body. And we'll show you because we're going to kill ourselves.
Right.
It flips into the opposite.
I read that they found a man dead in one of the tents in occupied Denton, Texas.
So they
have a coworker that just did a road trip, and he stayed at all the occupied encampments from New York to Buffalo to Erie, Pennsylvania.
A co-worker.
In Kentucky, yeah, in Chicago.
Now, this is because every little town or every other little town had two or three people doing it.
Exactly.
Very
so
small.
He came back and he said that. Yep, he came back and he was like, it was depressing.
It was just a few people.
It was like two homeless people.
See,
you know.
The chemical body level is not what's going on. It was the TV landscape inflating this thing.
Totally, exactly.
He goes looking for it. It's too
big. It was too big.
Too
it was too big
people.
For Steve Jobs to handle.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. He couldn't handle the retrieval of the TV body. You got that, folks? We have a big discovery here in the first seminar. Congratulations to Myron for provoking us to a new discovery, a new pattern.
It's all Dobbs.
Yeah. Well, Dobbs had to hear the data first.
I've got to defend
you
my
provide
thesis.
The data
for the next 3 days.
So that's what your thesis is about.
Indeed.
So,
comes out.
Right. Now, I'm going to take a look at the laws of media and see if there's an actual tetrad that might get Law of the Jungle. Let's see what that one is. How do you find that? It said Law of the Jungle. See? Copernican. Why don't I find... Here, find Law of the Jungle. You know the book better than me.
Find Law of the Jungle.
The tetrad on that.
I like the cubism one.
Yeah. And there's a tetrad on tactile space there. That's good.
Copernican evolution.
That's good.
Law of the Jungle.
Okay, so let's say that the world's become a chaotic jungle. It's a bad scene for the chemical body since 2008.
Well, I think it's good for his Tarzan.
Yeah, okay, so the Law of the Jungle... Is there a law? Oh, that means you take it in.
Isn't it the noble savage type of thing? Is that?
I guess not. Oh, it says up here the law of the jungle, where there is no law.
Okay.
So
yeah,
it's
yeah,
like
yeah.
a state of anarchy in a way.
Right.
So in the law of the jungle enhances lawlessness. Kill or be killed. Kangaroo court. Lynch law. Nature red in tooth and claw. I wonder. I don't know if there.
Why is kangaroo court included in there? That's interesting.
Kangaroo. You know what that is? That's lynching. That's mob rule.
Well, I was thinking more of the Soviet, part.
Yeah. It's like mob rule. No real prosecution.
Right.
And just run the guy through the courts and justify
your
killing him.
Like McCarthyism.
Right. Okay. So I'm wondering if Law of the Jungle relates to the ground to Occupy Wall Street. So is there lawlessness? Was the Occupy Wall Street trying to counter the lawlessness of the chip body or the lawlessness of the economy and how no one got supported? Yeah, they weren't supported on the chemical body level. Weren't even given enough money to get a student loan.
Yeah.
So there was a part of the chaos. It obsolesces everybody and everything. Well, that's why everybody... See, out of our mum, where we had you on as a guest, and I got this interesting pattern of it, I decided that Occupy Wall Street was a museum to the living form, to the chemical body.
Yeah.
It was a celebration. Because everybody was totally obsolesced by the law of the jungle being enhanced, that they all started to gather and sort of say, is there any humans left? Any chemical bodies? It retrieves artlessness and noble savage. Artlessness is the lack of speaking an agenda.
right? They didn't have, they weren't very articulate, even though that put them to being a savvy move. And they were noble savages. So sitting there...
Well, that's why people were throwing money at them.
Yeah. They required they required support.
These people are idiots, but we're going to support them in being idiots. We need to preserve them as idiots.
Yeah, because they're heroes.
Right.
They're noble savages.
Noble savages.
So it says in McLuhan's supplementary evidence, Tarzan's last yell, who greased my vine? Well, that's what the occupier are saying now. They didn't get what they thought they'd get, and now they're pissed. So they're going, who greased my vine? You know what that means?
You can't get any higher.
Yeah. Off with restraint is a slogan. And our Rudyard Kipling's 19th century poem, The Second Jungle Book, or a book, whatever it is, Power Politics. And it says, quote, when pack meets with pack in the jungle, and that really was occupied as one pack against the Bloomberg pack, right? And neither will go from the trail. They were trying to do that, just never move. Lie down till the leaders have spoken. Well, that's you're saying they want the 1%ers to come and talk to them. It may be fair words will prevail. That's what they're hoping for, that everybody get reasonable.
Right.
From the dialogue.
They kept saying, we're not being unreasonable here.
Yes.
We don't want to piss you guys off.
Right. We want respect. You come and address our issue. We want to be heard. We want media coverage in the TV landscape.
Right.
That's what they're asking for. So isn't that interesting?
But that's what they were saying. We don't want to kill the 1%.
Right.
You know, we just want a dialogue, you know. This and that.
And we know we...
Reasonable. Be reasonable.
Yeah.
You know you're screwing us over. Be reasonable.
and you know you're scared to come out because you know we're the majority. And we'll be reasonable, but we will win the argument because there's 99% of us.
We're the heroes.
Yeah, we're the heroes. So the...
Or yeah, we'll win the logical argument because there's more of us than you.
Yeah, that's where...
That's the French winning an argument.
Right, right. So the actually McLuhan's Tetrad and the Law of the Jungle, this is really power politics. It was an attempt to get power politics and bring the virtual society, the virtual class, back into visibility and to talk with the pack.
Yeah.
So when pack meets with pack in the jungle, it's been a jungle since 2008, and neither will go from the trail, Bloomberg wouldn't move, neither would the occupiers, lie down, neither will go from the trail, lie down till the leaders have spoken. I don't know if that's the command or a further statement of the situation. Neither will go from the trail, lie down till the leaders have spoken. It may be fair words will prevail. I don't even understand what this guy, Rudyard Kipling, is saying here, but you can use it. They were looking for fair words. They'd be fair. Acknowledge it. So,
Rudyard Kipling should have stuck to Ricky Tikki Tavi. I want to watch the sunset.
Wait a minute. Look at this.
Okay.
It flips into the tetrad of Law and Jungle, flips into equilibrium, law and ordure. Now, what that means, ordure is garbage. So law and order, it's a pun, law and ordure or ordeal, that's hunger strike. They're moving into an ordeal. And it's survival of the fittest, i.e. survival of the survivors. So I think McLuhan's Law of the Jungle tetrad predicted the
occupied Wall Street. That's a great quote.
Great what?
It's a great quote.
Yeah, from Kipling, you mean.
Yep.
Okay, so you want to go look at the...
I do, I just went for sunset.
We'll keep the recording.
Want to keep recording?
Yeah.
Should we leave this stuff here? Or?
Yeah, we can just walk around. Keep it invisible. We'll see how far you want to go. I'm going to have an apple. Want an apple?
Yes.
Okay, so...
Because I've been told that some amazing sunsets here.
Yeah. See, we can see a table from here.
Cool.
Now, what usually happens is just starting. If this is going to be a good one, the clouds actually enhance it. We get closer down, and then it just gets red, pink, way back.
Awesome. I think